Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen, Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. It's me, Jackie Cation. I'm back in my mother-in-law's room, which is now a guest room again. Very sad, but also, what are you going to do? So I had a dream about her last night. It was weird. But the, hey, Rangers, I've digressed. I'm super tie-tie. So let's do plug and play with one of my favorite guests of the Dork Forest. Guy Branum, welcome back.
Good to be here. It's one of my favorite pods.
Oh, there you go. It's right. You get to talk about the thing you love. For yeah. as long as you can last. And that's a fun thing.
A legitimately interested person, with a legitimately curious person, those are rare to come by on this planet.
That's right. 19 years later, I do care, actually. That's why I keep doing it. There's not a lot of other reasons to do it except for to, you have to like it. It's like stand up. Yeah, it's like absolutely everything that I do, it turns out. That's why I'm still married. I'm still interested. So there we go. All the things. but Byzantine history, the Byzantine Empire. Let's start. You want to start with the geography of that? You want to start with, what do you want to start with?
Sure. Let's start with the geography.
I know a little.
One of the things I love about Byzantine history is that it legitimately is a real life alternative history. Like, it really is. You start out from a place where you have a united Roman Empire that goes all the way from Spain all the way over to the borders of Persia, right. You know, north from England all the way south to Egypt and Morocco and stuff.
Yeah, North
and
Africa.
And then a little bit before the year 300 AD, they are like, this is too big. We have to split this thing up. And they appoint sort of like two guys to be emperors on each side and sort of like junior emperors. And then a couple of years after that, this guy Constantine, there's a civil war and he reconquers the whole thing and he makes the big move to move the capital of the Roman Empire from Rome in Italy over to the Bosporus, what is now Istanbul, right there on that very narrow like waterway that gets you from the Mediterranean into the Black Sea. So like, essentially at that point in time, going through the gates of Hercules, where Spain and Africa meet, that's meaningless because you're not going to do anything out in the Atlantic. But this is like the most important like passageway. You know, it's the Suez Canal.
It's the spice run.
Right. So many things. I mean, back then they're getting most of their slaves from Ukraine. So that's, you know, it's terribly important in a thousand different ways. And it also just moves the emperor of the Roman Empire closer to like all of the big cities that are in the Levant, in what is now Lebanon and Syria and Israel and Egypt. That's where rich people are.
Right. And that was, it was sort of their renaissance, if I remember correctly, North Africa and the Muslim world, right?
Well, the Muslims haven't shown up yet. You're getting ahead of us, Jackie.
Oh, don't get ahead. Too quick. 300 AD.
So, and Constantine is also the guy, when he wins his big battle, the night before, he has a vision of the letters, the Greek letters, C and R, letting him know that Christ was going to let him win. He's the guy who converts to Christianity and paves the way for the entire Roman Empire to go Christian.
Okay.
So, you know, that's like 300. And then over the next 200 years, over in Italy, over in the Western Empire, which is just like farms and not so many cities, you just have invasions and invasions of Germans. But this really powerful city in this really powerful place just gets even more powerful. A couple of hundred years in, they build these like huge impenetrable walls, the Theodosian walls, that make the city like incapable of being taken. And also,
you're talking about what is currently Istanbul.
Istanbul. So back then, it was just called Rome. And we get the names Constantinople. It just means Constantine's city. But he rebranded it as Rome. Everything you want in Rome.
He just renamed it as Rome.
Yes. And everything you want in Rome, you can get here. It sounds like for like the first like couple of years, people were like, this is janky. He just threw this thing up. But they moved enough of the art. And it was such an important trade city. Like, Jackie, for thousands of years afterwards, they had a fucking chain, and they would just throw that chain across the Bosporus. And if they didn't want Russia getting out, Russia couldn't get out. If they didn't want people getting in there, they couldn't get in. They had a stranglehold on this extremely important transport route.
Right, right.
But on top of it, they still are running everywhere that matters. And so they move the empire there. They fortify this city. You know, sometimes you have people, you know, come in and kind of conquer some stuff, but they can never take down the city.
Right.
And because they are sort of in this impenetrable, unstoppable position, they turn to the silliest of shit. first of all, they just become obsessed with, this is like deep in the Christian world. Like, you know, the Christian world has been going here for now like 400 or 500 years, and it's full of bishops who have different opinions. And the two things that are biggest are chariot racing and arguing about irrelevant stuff about Jesus. So like, is Jesus one guy who's a little bit mortal and a little bit immortal? Is he two separate natures in the same body? Was he a hologram the entire time because he's entirely divine and not a body?
Right.
And that stuff gets deeply tied up with who you root for in the chariot races.
What?
Yes. So they have the hippodrome.
Oh, right. Because some of them are going to be supported by one Jesus and the other one's going to be supported by a different Jesus. And it's just a weird way to figure out which one God thinks is right.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like there's so many things about that. Like, there's no logical reason why, like, one group of our people like abortion and trans people and the Dodgers. And why, you know, other people,
it's just as arbitrary.
Yes, it's just as arbitrary. And because this city was, like, so powerful and so looking in on itself, they could really just, like, waste their time on this shit, and they still had just infinite grain and infinite money. Like one of the other big things is, I'm sure from 19 years of the Dark Forest, you must be aware of the purple Phoenician dye, right?
Yes, I have actually seen the purple Phoenician, or if not that dye, a different dye that referenced that dye, because we went to a Roman ruin in the middle of France, and they had dye, and they mentioned the Phoenician purple dye. Yes, but I can't remember all about it. So tell me. Yes.
So like 1,000 years before this time, the Phoenicians had made a huge mercantile empire off of the fact that they had the only good purple dye in the world, made from weird carnivorous snails in the ocean.
Right.
And selling that, it was the thing that indicated you were rich. It's why purple became the color of emperors. It's why Roman senators had purple on their togas, but only a little bit. It's why the flag of Israel is that color blue. because the Jews couldn't afford the good snail dye. And so they had to make their symbols out of Kirkland brand blue dye. And
you'll be happy to know, by the way, that when you said the word dye, I thought of a dice. And
that's reasonable.
D-Y-E. It is reasonable coming from where my brain is right now. But yes. I do know about the I did. I forgot about that. They were, I didn't know they were carnivorous snails, quite honestly. Yes. So that is dangerous to harvest a carnivorous snail. It will bite you.
Like, I don't know that they people. I just know that they're like mean, aggressive snails.
And they could be boiled down for purple.
Right. And, you know, because the Roman Empire never did, like, the Roman emperors were so bad at having sons that lived. So, like, most of the Roman emperor, you're, like, marrying your niece and then adopting your great-nephew or something like that.
Right, right, right.
But
how very Mad Max of them.
Right.
Wow.
But it led to kind of an interesting system of being able to try to pick who was competent. And
okay.
So, I mean, look, that led to crazy times when sometimes a lady would be like, my son's good enough, and he was insane. But it meant that the Byzantine Empire, sort of like straddling this ancient world and the medieval world, was sort of trying to get at something like, you know, direct line descent, but periodically the Praetorian Guard would murder somebody. Oh, well, there are a lot of cool ways of making it so... So someone can't inherit. The reason I brought up the purple was the coolest way to inherit is if you were born to somebody in the imperial family, you would be born in a room that was entirely that purple, and you were porphyrogenetos. You were born to the purple. And so you had the right to be there. But if you wanted to get people out of the way, because we're very, very Christian now, and our king has to be perfect like God, you could cut off your son's genitals or his nose. Like, you capture them, you get him in their power, and then you cut off his nose, and then he can't be emperor because he doesn't have a nose.
He's just too weird looking.
Right.
Or he's missing. Could you cut off a finger or something less?
For some reason, it was the nose. Like, I think, like, the finger is something
horrifying
that might happen in the course of life. But we're going to get to a woman, and her name was Irene, and she was regent for her sons, and she liked being regent. She was good at the job. And why not cut off their noses, send them off to a monastery? They'll have a nice life, and I'll get to keep running things. But an important thing to understand, I, for a long time, was always, well, they thought about Jesus too much. Oh, and like the Jesus fighting gets to the point that in the Nike riots in around 600, there is a riot where a bunch of people get killed about the outcome of a chariot race. And two guys are put on trial, one who is a supporter of green and one who is a supporter of blue. And they are sentenced to hanging, but the gibbet breaks and they don't die.
Oh, wow.
And the priest, like, took them into a church to protect them, and they tried to get Justinian, the emperor, to, like, commute their sentences, and he didn't do it fast enough. So he said that there's going to be another race, and then I'm going to free them. But after that race, I think it wasn't definitive in some way, and so they had a riot, and 30,000 people were killed.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
So they had a smaller riot. About a race, and then Justinian got involved, and then 30,000 people were killed.
Yes. but I always thought, like, well, they didn't have microscopes. Of course they have to be fighting about Jesus. It's the only thing you can fight about. But that's not remotely true. When the Byzantine Empire took over the Eastern Roman Empire, it was full of Greek science. So that's one of the big changes between the Roman Empire speaks Latin, but once you move to New Rome, everybody's speaking Greek. And down in Alexandria, we got people building little steam-powered robots. We got people building little steam-powered cars. We've got Hypatia.
What?
Yes.
In what year is this? 600?
500.
Okay.
We've got Hypatia of Alexandria. She's a university professor who probably figured out, I mean, she didn't figure out that the sun was at the center of the solar system, but she probably figured out that the planets revolve in she was really good at conic sections. So she figured out that they were ellipses, not circles.
Okay.
And she was the teacher of both the local bishop and the local Roman governor. And there was a the Jews and the Christians got in a fight about who was more right. Because at this point in time, the Jews are a little bit to the Christians, like, you guys are a weird cult of us. We should be...
you should listen to us. We don't think he's actually the Messiah. But okay, you liked him. And okay.
The Christians got really mad because, you know, Alexandria had this famous, famous library where if your ship went into Alexandria from its foundation by Alexander the Great in 300 BC up until this point in time, they took your book and they copied it and they gave you the copy and they said, we're keeping the original. And so all of the originals are in this one spot. Hypatia of Alexandria has access to all of them. And the Christians got freaked out about all of the pagan knowledge that was there. And so the library had already been burned down before.
By definition, that's Aristotle.
Yes. Yes.
So
they rolled in and they did the final burning of this new version of the...
the library?
The library. And then because they thought Hypatia was a witch because of all of the stuff that she could do with physics, they took broken pieces of pots and they removed all of her skin. So that's what happened to all of the West. Like, learning was at this amazing point.
Yes. And
then, like, religion becoming, like, the thing. Like, right. Caused this to, you know, all of that learning became dangerous and got kind of destroyed, burned, that kind
of
thing.
Right. And people killed. Wow. That is, so there's still a Constantinople. There's still a Rome of the East, right?
There's a Rome of the East.
When Alexandria's library is burned down for the last time?
Yes. There's still a Rome of the East. And at that point in time, like, the Rome of the West has just fallen. Right. And again, over there, again, ideas of what Jesus is like is really part of when the Germans come in and start, you know, taking over Rome. They're also like, we have a different notion of Jesus.
Yes. So
about 150 years after the Western Empire falls, we got Justinian and his wife Theodora.
Okay.
Justinian is like one of the really great emperors of the Byzantine Empire.
Really?
And his wife, Theodosia, definitely a showgirl, probably a hooker. Wonderful guy, I think his name is Procopius. He's like an official historian of the time, and he writes an official history, and he also writes like a sordid, deeply, you know, scandalous history. It's called The Secret History. And it's just like, here's the shit I couldn't tell you. It's very Andy Cohen.
That is outstanding. I want the unofficial. Of both of them, of Justinian and Theodora, or just Theodora?
I mean, everything that's going on, but he really talks mad shit at Theodora. And some people are like, he was just mad at how in control she was. Mm. But, you know, she's amazing.
Could have been.
So Justinian, at around 600, he goes and he reconquers the Western Empire. He takes over Italy. He gets some of Spain. He's got all of North Africa still. And he's really doing a good job of keeping the Persians
back.
Yeah. The Persians at bay. And then, about 70 years after that, some crazy shit goes on in the Saudi Arabian desert. And and Justinian has been away for a while. And like, one of the things that we use the word Byzantine for is to imply administrative complexity.
Yes.
And let's think about it. By 600 AD, like, Rome has been a going venture for like 1200 years. Yeah. They've picked up everything from Rome and tried to bring it over. And now everything is ridiculous. There are different administrative structures for there are the bearded roles for men who have their own genitals. there are a separate set of administrative roles that are just for Caucasian eunuchs, because you started out having eunuchs that were just there in the harem, sort of making sure that the women are taken care of by people who won't try to have sex with them. But then they got to a point where those guys were so chatty and involved that they were running a whole portion of the administrative stuff. And the black eunuchs continued to do the work within the harem. But also, they had their own power and administrative system. Because they are there regulating, because the women were very powerful and involved because they had the ear of the emperor. And so access to them. And then on top of all of that, you also have a separate Christian administration who have access and control and power. A thing that will be interesting to you is throughout this time, so Armenia had been split up between the Persian Empire and the Byzantine Empire.
Right.
And Armenians have a slight difference of opinion about the nature of Christ with the Orthodox Christians. And so that meant...
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Do you know what they were? Because I believe I was raised Orthodox.
I believe that the Armenian church believes that Christ has one nature with a mixture of the divine and the human within it, where... The Orthodox Church, I believe, thinks that he has simultaneous human and divine natures that exist.
That sounds more like, I don't speak Armenian, so it was very much believe whatever you want. But that does sound actually more where it was just like, it was one guy, but he was both divine and human.
Yes.
So that was what I was raised with. Okay.
I believe that's the more Orthodox take on things.
Okay. Well,
here are the big, so that's one of the big questions that tears apart the empire. The other one is, when's Easter? When's Easter is a huge question.
Huge question. If I remember correctly, it caused wars.
Yes.
Right?
So what it is like, in the Eastern Empire, you want to know what you still have a bunch of around? Jews. And you want to know what Jews love to do? Tell you that you're doing it wrong. And so over in the Western Empire, like, they're able to just make these decisions on their own without as many Jews around. And also, in the West, there's no emperor around anymore. It's just a pope making calls.
So, getting laid, having good times.
Yes. And so the two big questions that the Jews are messing up for the Eastern Empire are, when's Easter? Should it just be on the same day as Passover? Or should we date it in a different way? And then also, should there be images of humans? Should there be images of humans or the divine? And that leads to one of our big fights of the 700-800s is the iconoclasts, who are like, no graven images. God told us no graven images. That's there. And then the people who are like, we're not Jews. We're an empire. You know, and so that's why you have all of these mosaics and wonderful things. And it's why Orthodox churches now have the prettiest and most ornate images of saints, because it went from people trying to burn the images to the iconic Irene, who I mentioned before. One of the things that she had to remove her son's noses for was so that she could make sure that there were still pictures in the churches,
in churches,
making them beautiful. Yes.
Oh, she. Wow. So there was some decorating going on. That seems like it must have been a bigger deal. Because losing a couple of noses on her kids. Here's what I do know is that one of my nephews once said to me, because this is a big thing in the Armenian church, that the country of Armenia was the first Christian nation.
Yeah.
And this is something that is much like Green Bay Packers are owned by the town. The Armenian church was the first Christian nation. And when Eric was probably 16 or 17, and he pointed that out. I said, you realize what that means? That means that we were the first as a nation to say, if you aren't Christian, we're going to kill you.
Yes.
And he was like, oh no, that's right. And so you got to think it through, folks. You got to be proud of something. You got to know what it means.
Well, but I mean, also, the Armenians only ruled themselves for a brief period of time after that.
We're not good at it.
Before they became, well, what you were was a very significant, like, well-positioned minority within the Byzantine Empire. Like, you guys, the reason that you guys are all over the Middle East is because this was a place where you were an accepted variant of Christianity. There were, you know, there were Armenians who were in the aristocracy. A couple of Armenians became emperor along the way.
Of the Byzantine Empire?
Of the Byzantine Empire.
Why didn't my father tell me this? He's constantly pointing at movies going, Technician, there's an Armenian. And you're like, oh, you're killing me. Okay. Well,
and it's also why after the Byzantine Empire falls apart, there are a bunch of Armenian states that come up in places that aren't straight up Armenia, like down sort of like the corner of Turkey into Syria and Lebanon in the like 1200s, 1300s was like an Armenian state down there. You guys were all over. So, you know, Justinian expands the empire. Everything's great. And then we have 150 years of this fragile and terrible administrative system. And
Hang on a second. Yes. Let's just tell the American public or the world public that it's garbage day at Guy's house.
I'm so sorry.
That's fine. There's nothing to know. And I think that your headset may or may not. I mean, we checked it. It's the one that's recording things. But for some reason, it's very powerful. So good to know that the infrastructure is still working in Los Angeles. Continue. 150 years of nonsense.
150 years of nonsense. And then Islam happens. Like right at this magnificent point when both the Persian Empire and the Byzantine Empire are like, barely holding on, a house of cards. And so let's let the garbage truck go.
And now, silence. Yes.
So the Muslims come out full of enthusiasm and excitement. You guys, we've got it figured out. And they roll in and they sweep through Egypt. And the minute you lose Egypt, you lose all that grain. You could send an army anywhere if you've got the grain of Egypt. And once the Byzantine Empire loses that, it's rough. They go across North Africa, these extremely wealthy, especially grain-rich provinces, gone. They go into Syria, which is, again, like very urbanized, important for trade with the East. They convert everybody, they take it over. And, you know, the Byzantine Empire tries to fight back, but at this point in time, they're not the best at fighting a land war. They have the arrogance of knowing if anybody gets to their city walls, they'll fucking just, like, you'll just crash up against them. And then, Jackie, they cannot be beat on the seas. Would you like to know why they cannot be beat on the seas?
Why cannot they be beat on the seas?
Two reasons. The first one is the Arabs, not really so much about the seas. They only have little boats. They're about horses. They're about land. They don't have a culture of seafaring. And like the Byzantines have been running things
in the Mediterranean.
Yes.
For a century. Yeah.
And then they got this thing called Greek fire. What is Greek fire? We don't know. Greek fire was a thing that you shot out of a hose and it caught on fire. And it could stay on fire on top of the ocean. The ocean did not put it out. You went and you tried to besiege a Byzantine city, they would spray this shit. It's essentially napalm.
Right.
All over your troops. If you were in a sea battle with them, they'd spray shit onto your boat that would just burn your boat. And they would take you out.
But it's gone. It's lost to...
It's lost to history. There's speculation that it was based on petroleum, because, you know, over there
in
Azerbaijan, there's a shit ton of petroleum. They kind of understood how to use it. There's thoughts that it might have been based on pitch from pine trees, but we don't know.
That feels less likely. Petroleum being much more common.
Yes.
So, right. But you still have to process petroleum, I think.
Right.
To make it flammable. Yeah.
Like, and they had, you know, they had this old school Greek science, but then they also became so scared of somebody else getting it that it was, you know, like Roman concrete, it was a secret that was lost. You know, they were so protective of the power that they had. Now, from the other direction, the Bulgars...
Did we lose Roman concrete? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, we lost Roman concrete between the end of the Roman Empire and... Our concrete is different. It's called Portland cement. It was invented in like the 1830s, I think. And it's not as good as Roman concrete. Our concrete, if you pour it into water, it will just like melt away and not work.
It'll dissolve.
Roman concrete, and they've now pretty much figured out that Roman concrete, it's because they use this very particular ash from Pompeii. But
okay. Wow.
You could pour Roman concrete into seawater, and it would cure harder than it would if it wasn't wet.
What? That's amazing. Oh my gosh.
If you want to build a fucking port, like, you know, all the power in the world. so, the Huns had come in and the Bulgars had come in. And now let's remember, New Rome, Constantinople. Oh, did I explain to you what Istanbul means?
Not offhand. No, I don't remember.
Istanbul is Turkish towards this towards the city. So if you ask somebody where they're going, they say, oh, I'm going towards the city. I'm going to Istanbul. I'm going Istanbul. So yes. I think that that's funny. That it's just like, we're going towards the city.
Towards the city. And then they were like, we're just, and then all the people who didn't speak Turkish were like, oh, I guess it's called Istanbul.
Right.
And they're like, fine.
Constantinople is on the European side of the Bosporus, on this little horn-shaped peninsula. Okay. And so, you know, even when people were coming from the east, they couldn't get over the Bosporus. And if they came around all the way around the Black Sea, like the Huns or the Bulgars, they would run up against those walls. So the Arabs basically, like, fight some land battles with the Byzantines. They spend a couple hundred years getting good at boats. Eventually they get very good at boats.
Right.
But they go all the way over and they sweep up in to Spain and head into France. But they're still, you know, like they can't fully take on the remnants of this amazing empire.
Right.
Now, a couple of hundred years after that, well, first of all, we talked about that Pope, and that Pope has been getting very full of himself over in Rome. And Justinian, the Eastern Roman Empire has been continuing to like send a letter that says, I let you be the Bishop of Rome. Like, it's good that you be the Bishop of Rome.
Yep.
And then around 1050, and also the Pope in Rome has been very gossipy and has been getting very involved in the fights between the various bishops and the various nobles in the West. And sort of saying, like, hey, if you guys need somebody to decide who's right, I'm right here. I'm the descendant of Saint Peter. And when Charlemagne rolled in, Charlemagne said, if you make me the Emperor of Rome, I will give you a bunch of land for yourself. Now suddenly this Pope in Rome is super powerful.
Right,
and the Emperor is like, stop that.
And right.
Also, grace comes from the Father and the Son. I think this is the difference. And the Pope is like, no, it comes from the Father through the Son. And they get in a fight about that. And then finally, the Pope excommunicates the Emperor, and the Patriarch of Constantinople excommunicates the Pope. And that's the schism. There's no longer one Christian church. There's now two Christian churches. Because, like, when Armenia and the Orthodox Church disagreed, it wasn't, like, something that we need to break the church about.
Right,
it's just, like, something, we just have different approaches to things. You guys keep writing your books in Armenian where you lie about Jesus, and we'll write the real stuff.
In Greek.
Right. So at this point in time, there's a schism. We're mad at each other. The Pope is drunk on power, and there is an idea that the Patriarch is always a little bit subservient to the Emperor, where over on the Western side, the Pope is always a little bit above whoever is like the paramount king of the biggest, you know, the Holy Roman Emperor, the guy who's running Germany. So then, like 100 years later, these Arabs are all over the Holy Land.
Right.
And the East is starting to get kind of scared about it. So they send a nice letter to the Pope. And they say, we need help. Christianity needs to have an Avengers Endgame where you guys roll in and you guys help us retake the Holy Land for the Christians.
Right.
And it becomes...
Because we need that grain.
Right. And also we need the pride. We need, like, you know, everyone understands, like, the French have been fighting wars down in the Pyrenees. These people are like trying to roll up. Like, yeah. We have to do something. And so they go off for the first crusade, and it's a rousing success. They go and they take over all of the Holy Land. And do they hand the Holy Land back to the Byzantines?
I gotta guess no.
No, they turn it into crusader states. They have a French guy who's the king of Jerusalem. They have a French guy who's the king of Antioch.
What?
There's a great line in The Lion in Winter. It's not historical, but Eleanor of Aquitaine says, "It was always so hard for me as a child because they told me Jesus was the king of Jerusalem, but so was Uncle Raymond."
Wow. So, I'm going to say that is as accurate as anything that's ever been written in history. Yes.
So, like, you know, and the Arabs have been, the Muslims have been having their own fights. They've completely ruled Persia. And also by this point in time, because they do have this, like, empire that runs from Spain all the way to Persia, they're doing amazing stuff. They're rolling up with the number zero. They've got sugar cane. Like, they can, like, get water from anywhere to anywhere. They can irrigate anything.
Right. This is the 1000s or the 1100s?
This is the 1100s. The 1100s. And the mostly, like, the French and the Germans and the Italians set up these crusader states that are basically like 4,000 knights and their wives on top of a population of thousands. That is a weird, precarious kind of thing. Now, look, the Middle East was diverse. There are lots of Jews. There are lots of Christians. There are lots of Muslims. This is where they start out the thing of, hey, Christians of Lebanon, we're going to take care of you. We're here to protect you. This is where it's a rough run of everyone who takes over Jerusalem kills all the Jews. Christians take over, let's kill some Jews. Muslims take over, let's kill some Jews. Not so great. But those crusader states have a nasty run. Like, there are diseases there that they're not used to. So guys keep dying when their son is four, or guys keep dying with only a daughter. And it's rough for governance of this place. So these crusader states start getting weak. They start not being able to hold themselves up. And so the crusader states send out another thing. Hey, we need another crusade to come support us.
Okay.
This one is less well organized. Eleanor of Aquitaine, then the Queen of France, decides she's going to ride bare-breasted with 40 of her maids like Amazons.
Wow.
Everyone's like,
when was fiction invented?
Right.
Anyway, so
it's bullshit. And I think it's the Second Crusade where there's like this great moment where, one of the other things that's happened, I'm so sorry. Is like, you also have had the Turks coming out of Central Asia, and they have converted to Islam. So they are now part of the operation that is supporting this Islamic game, and they are moving into Anatolia, what would eventually become Turkey, spoiler alert, in droves. And the amazing thing about the Turks is all of those French and English people are thousands of miles away from home. And all of the Turks are, 10 feet away from their house because they bring their house with them. They don't have to worry about where do we get grain because they've got horses and sheep that will provide them with everything that they need. Mm-hmm. And so they just start moving in. And then in the Second Crusade, there's an amazing moment. Their primary mode of fighting was they had stirrups. So they would shoot bows and arrows from on top of horses.
Right.
And the Europeans were knights with armor. What kind of horse would you want if you were a knight with lots of armor?
A draft horse, a big horse,
male stallion. And if you were shooting bows and arrows off of horses, what kind of horse would you want?
You'd want a smaller horse. A faster horse.
A faster horse, perhaps a mare. There was an iconic battle where all of the Turkish horses were in heat, and like
what?
All of the stallions. We're like, I know that my job is to go and joust with this guy, but also I want to fuck. And magnificent shit show, Second Crusade, awash.
What? Yeah.
Third Crusade is better, and this is all just to build
third
us towards
Crusade's better.
The Fourth Crusade, where the Western Europeans all get to Byzantium, to Constantinople, and they're going to help, and then they get in a fight with the emperor, and then they conquer Constantinople.
Instead,
they're like, why would we go and sack Jerusalem again? We've already got so many pieces of John the Baptist. There's a lot of gold right here.
Right. This is where you're keeping all the cash.
Right.
Wait, did you glided over something that I have to back up to. Did the Turks invent the stirrup?
Yes. So the stirrup, with the stirrup, okay. When you don't have stirrups, you have to have your hands on the reins to direct your horse.
Yeah.
But with stirrups, you can have something in both of your hands and still...
And stir them with your knees and your feet.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
And so that was like a major innovation. And the Muslim world is just doing the best job of getting information and culture all throughout it. And that's part of it. And they're also, like, if you accept Islam, whatever language you speak, honestly, we would prefer it if you spoke Arabic. But, you know, the Turks keep speaking Turkish, the Persians keep speaking Persian. Their empire isn't 1,500 years old. So it's really dynamic. They get really good.
It's got a lot more energy.
Right.
Yeah.
They get really, really good at boats. And then gunpowder shows up. Gunpowder shows up from China. And both sides have gunpowder. And suddenly these walls.
Hell breaks loose.
That seemed impenetrable, which were built 1,000 years ago.
Right.
Are not quite so useful anymore. So the Fourth Crusade is in like the year 1200. And by this point in time, the pressure on the Byzantines, like after the Western Christians take over.
Right. And like essentially sack Constantinople.
Yeah. Right. It sort of falls apart. That's when you start having like these little Armenian countries showing up over by like Kurdistan and Syria and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then some of the emperors get their shit together enough to sort of like re-solidify things. But the Byzantine Empire just shrinks and shrinks. Now there are some of those, because they were so good at boats, there are islands that they keep forever. So like Corsica and Sardinia and Sicily and Crete, like Cyprus, those they are able to keep hold of far, far into this process and keep getting, you know, Sardinia can send wheat to you. Like Corsica has nothing. Beautiful. But it shrinks and shrinks. And eventually the Turks, they cross around on the water. They get to the other side, to like Macedonia, to Greece. Yeah. And they set up their shit on the other side too, and they have completely surrounded, and it becomes just this city. Like it's sort of like,
all there is.
It's very Grey Gardens. It's very, they once lived in this gigantic world, and now there's just,
I know
this,
about Grey Gardens because of the Dork Forest. Someone told me something about the Kennedys.
Yes. Who was gay enough to do that?
I don't know, but she was great. I think it was a woman.
But like they get surrounded, but the whole time they're still able, like they're still having chariot races. They still have all of these very complex court procedures.
Thank God.
People from outside describe it like a dance. The way that people wearing uniforms that comport with the various chariot teams like dance to sort of like give a document to the president, which is an office of the eunuchs, who then hands it to a man with a beard and like stuff like that.
Wow. Okay.
We've got, would you like to know who we have as bodyguards for our emperor by this point in time?
Who?
Vikings. We've got Vikings who have come, like the Vikings from up in the north come down the rivers into Russia. That's where we end up getting the white population of Russia. But then they find the south flowing rivers. They find the Danube and the Dnieper. They hop on those And the emperor the emperor loves having a nice stocky Viking, who's also sure. who's also like a foreigner, to be the person who protects them. Right,
because they can be bought.
Right.
And they yes.
They're yeah. like not part of the internal politics. And so like the Turks encroach and encroach and encroach. And then finally, and it's like it's kind of magical that at the same time. So like throughout the 1400s, the West has also been fighting really hard to retake Spain, right?
Okay.
Because Spain had been very, very Muslim, very, very Jewish, but with a large Christian population for a long time. And Ferdinand and Isabella are fighting for the Reconquista, driving out all of the Arabs who have been in the Iberian Peninsula.
What year is the Inquisition? Is that 1600s?
Starts in 1492 when they win. So like literally... 1492, it all goes down. Ferdinand and Isabella have solidly won. They send Columbus off to
discover
America, mm-hmm. and discover in quotes. And then the Inquisition starts, I think, the day after he leaves.
he's like, good, that's yes. great.
So while that fighting is going on in Spain, the Turks are fighting just one more war against the Byzantine Empire. They finally break through those
walls.
Yes, the Theodosian walls finally go down. They roll in, and then everyone gets the fuck out of Dodge. Everyone, have you ever heard
who has any way of getting out of Constantinople leave?
Yes. So have you heard of El Greco?
Yes.
So El Greco, a Greek guy who went to Spain and was a painter there, he was from Crete. So he was one of those people who was part of the larger Byzantine world, and his family was like, it's no longer cool to be Christian here. We're going to go somewhere where it's safe. There was a Jewish lady in Constantinople who printed Jewish texts. She goes to Venice, which is sort of like the gateway in between the East and the West.
Right,
and
right.
She sets up a printing press, and she has all of these old Greek texts, and she has all of these like old school Jewish materials that are from the East, and she starts printing them out. And this is one of the things that makes the Renaissance happen, is cracking Byzantium and pouring all of that Greek knowledge. Like, yes, the Arabs deliver some of it in their way. They had texts that we didn't have, but a bunch right. of it is just all of these really, really smart, like poor people couldn't get on a boat and take themselves to Spain or Rome. But right. you have this weird population exchange where a bunch of smart Greek speakers go out and fill the rest of the Mediterranean. And then at the same time, you have the Inquisition start in Spain, where all of the smartest Jews and Arabs are. And then they go and...
They flee to Italy as well?
Some of them flee to Italy, but mostly they flee to Istanbul, to Constantinople.
Oh.
Hank Azaria's family, Hank Azaria from The Simpsons.
Right.
His family are Jews, I believe, from Thessalonica in Greece.
Okay.
But at home... When he was growing up in the 70s, they spoke Ladino, a Jewish Spanish that was the primary spoken language of Jews in Istanbul. So in Istanbul, there were like a couple of different, there were Greek-speaking Jews,
yep.
and then there were Jews who spoke their weird Yiddish Spanish. Of Spanish.
Okay. Yes.
And there were more of the Spanish Jews in Turkey and Istanbul and Greece. From 1450 until 1930. Yes, okay. Well, no, until the Holocaust.
Until the Holocaust, when things happened. Yes.
So you had this, I mean, there's a way that, like, you could see it as terribly, terribly sad, but there's so much continuity. Like, when the Turks roll in, they don't want to destroy this beautiful culture. They rebuild those walls. They mm-hmm. take the Hagia Sophia. Like, when the emperors decided the temple in Jerusalem is gone, we will build a Christian temple that is better, and it is named Holy Wisdom. And the Turks turn it into a mosque. Like, right. They just roll it over, and so much of the culture of that city, they just keep going in continuity.
Right, right. They just, yeah, they keep, like every conqueror, they keep what they like and they just build on it, or they work around it, right?
Right. And the thing is like, it's a city that's too cosmopolitan. Like, you can't say, oh, there are no Christians here. You have to, like, the Patriarch of Constantinople, the Muslims basically said, like, you rule your community. Okay. Like, you guys will still be important in our administration and everything like that, but you guys do your own thing. Jews, this guy is the head rabbi, and then he, like, if you guys do what he says. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the Armenians, even after the Turks took over, the Armenians were just understood as an important inherent part of this empire and necessary. And it wasn't until nationalism with Ataturk. Right. So like, you know, then you've got 600 years of Turkish rule, but it's Ataturk saying this is a country by the Turks for the Turks, that you lead to the trouble.
So they didn't invent nationalism, right. The Turks. So no. It's not, you know, it's, I will say this is what I know about the history that you just rattled off. I mostly know from a fiction novel written by Louis L'Amour.
Oh, wonderful.
The Walking Drum. And The Walking Drum is a book about an Irish boy who leaves to find his father who has gone on the Crusades. And he's got to make it. And he heard his father's in like Singapore. So he goes through Spain and then Northern Europe. And he becomes erudite. He learns about soap. It's a page turner. The Walking Drum. I recommend everyone. It's actually quite, I loved it.
I think that fantasy is just a gateway drug for real history. I think that I would not like take down a book about the Prussians if it weren't for Tolkien.
Right. Well, and wait, you wouldn't take down the book about the Prussians without Tolkien? What happened there?
Oh, just unpack sort of like, that. I mean, it makes you obsessed with, it makes you interested in empires and how they work and history and how it works.
Right.
And political processes and change and like,
and justice and injustice and humanize, fiction itself humanizes everybody. Right.
Yeah.
And then you can see that everyone, we have more in common.
All right. I got a question for Jackie Cation.
Oh.
Are you a Dune person or not?
First three books had to stop because I did an episode about Dune and it was a comic from New York whose name is escaping me, but he went so deep into it. And the reason I stopped was because it stopped being about the sandworms, which I thought, and I wanted to ride sandworms. And it became about the politics of the universe.
Well, even those first three books, I was like you, I read three books and then I was done.
Yep.
But those have a degree of moral vacancy I find really interesting. I think Frank Herbert is arguing all human culture is a path to fascism. And ooh. I didn't know if that would set poorly with you because you're somebody with a very like clear moral worldview.
Well, and I was just talking, I was on a Bugle podcast earlier today talking about cyberpunk and, you know how cyberpunk is described as sort of high tech but low life.
Yeah,
where their lives are trash.
Yeah,
but the tech is ridiculous, right?
Yeah,
and I was reminded of a book. What was that book called? Oh, When Gravity Fails, George Alec Effinger. It's essentially noir, but murder mystery, but set in like a Northern Africa, kind of a Mumbai, but in the red light district.
Yeah.
Of Aleppo. I mean, it's just, and it's awesome. And it's set in like 2059 or whatever. And it was written in the 80s and you can chip in and you can live your life as, you know, Churchill, you could live your life as Mark Twain. You could be Marilyn Monroe. Dancers do that. They chip in as them and then they unchip and then they go home and raise their kids. And Jack the Ripper has a bad guy has chipped in Jack the Ripper. And he's also chipped in James Bond. And it's I don't like a depressing outlook on the future of humanity, whether or not it's true. I can do that myself. I don't need actually to have it exacerbated by or just encouraged by fiction. I was talking recently about how like I don't have a problem believing in God.
Yeah.
Because of the church that I was raised in was a very supportive God. It was a God that was rooting for me. Good luck.
Yeah.
Don't do that again. That was the entire religion as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of loved fiction so much that there's part of me that believes that the Lord of the Rings is true somewhere.
Yes.
Yes. Because I don't think anyone's that good of a writer.
Well, I just believe that anything people put themselves into that much has meaning and truth and reality. Like did God make us? Did we make God? I think that these things are are in concert with each other and not separate. And I like the way, because I think in my own life, I have really seen how believing is valuable, not in the fake way, but just sort of like, both of us have careers that are ridiculous. And there was a little girl in Wisconsin who thought that a sad and boring life was the only thing that could come out at her. And she believed hard enough that she got something infinitely more wonderful. And like that to me is so powerful.
It's really powerful. And
I want to tell you about one last person from the Byzantine Empire.
Please do. Yeah, we're almost at an hour. Yeah. This has been amazing.
It's very much on topic. So Anna Komnena, her father was the emperor, and then he got deposed, and she tried to get her husband made emperor, but I think her brother took over, and like lots of terrible family things. And then she just wrote a book about how great her dad was. Like she was, I'm not going to win the battle, I'm going to win the war. And so she just, and like, because for so long, so many female voices were just hidden. You know that there were so many smart, nasty bitches who had so much to say and it didn't get anywhere. That when some of them had enough social advantage and enough push, that they were like, no. I will tell the story. It's very Hamilton. Like she told the story and she ended up winning.
Right. She told the story she wanted to tell.
Yeah.
And whoever's, you know, in many ways, the pen is mightier than the sword until they cut you down. But if the book lives, the idea lives. And that's the amazing thing. Guy Branum, tell the people. It's at Guy Branum. It'll be in the notes. If you're not already following, you're a fool. But there are many episodes that you can listen to previously too.
It's at Guy Branum, across all social media, except for TikTok, where I am at Guy Branum Comedian. And, please also, I'm doing my show Be Fruitful at the Lyric Hyperion. I'm still figuring it out, but it's February 27th, March 2nd, March 6th, and April 4th. So if you guys want to come and see
a
weird show that will be more like the Dork Forest than probably any comedy show you have experienced, maybe not if you're a Jackie fan.
Right. But if you're in LA on any of those dates, February 22nd, 27th, March 2nd, March 6th, and April
4th.
Lyric Hyperion, check out their website, check out Guy Branum's, all the things, Instagram and all that. Is there a GuyBranum.com?
Yes, there is a GuyBranum.com.
I love it. And you should know that the Great Gardens episode was episode 634 with a New York comic named Heather Thompson.
Oh.
Yes. So there you go. If you guys care about Great Gardens, go back and watch me learn about the Kennedys again. So thank you so much for being on the show, Guy.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun.
Yay. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was with one of my favorites, Guy Branum. Guy Branum's the best.
He is one of your best guests ever, honestly.
He truly is. Plug and play.
He is a delight, full of knowledge, and just so interesting to listen to.
And he has a hot take, and this was the Byzantine Empire.
A hot take on the Byzantine Empire.
Right. Lasting from like 100 AD.
Yes.
Until like the 1500s. And right, he actually right. talked about it until like 1930. But wow. It was.
Oh, there's the cat. Sort
of, oh, you found the cat? Oh, good. That's good. The cat was excited. Once I closed this door, now the cat wants to come up. So here's what I learned about in the Byzantine Empire. Guy Branum, of course, knows I'm Armenian, likes to talk it up. Right. And he said, for hundreds and hundreds of years until Turkish nationalism took over, Armenians, an accepted variant of Christianity, and was just fine. And that's why we're everywhere.
It wasn't until the Turks started worrying about Russian encroachment via Armenia, right?
No, it was before that, but it was just, it wasn't, but it was, I don't know. He actually does say.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Yeah. He had,
that's well past the purview, the bounds of the Byzantine Empire.
Well, except there was, he was talking about one of the things that I did not know. This is that, Istanbul when Constantine went there, and we know the song, but we're not going to talk.
We
about
do
it.
Know the song. We're spending a lot of effort repressing our urge to sing the song.
Just break into song. But it was called Rome. He just called it Rome.
Oh.
And Istanbul is actually Turkish for going to town.
What is it?
We're going to town.
Oh, we're going to town.
Istanbul.
Right. Istanbul. Yeah.
Yes. And right. But there was two big things. They were so, I guess their fortress was so great that they had enough free time and enough security to go bananas, to go completely out of their tiny lizard minds. And they mostly argued between what Jesus was. Constantine was the first Christian emperor, right?
Right,
so
right, right.
The almost all of the arguments in town was Jesus one guy who was half divine and half human.
Right.
Was he a guy who was all divine, who came down and took form? Or was he a hologram? Because he was all divine and wasn't
even a real person to begin with.
Well, it was just sort of a vision that people saw.
And
they would have chariot races. And the chariot races would be between the different people. And whoever won.
Oh, got to decide?
It was God's mandate.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you're going to leave it up to God, you gotta involve some sort of like coin flip. Right.
But what I also did not know was that the Byzantine Empire invented, they were a big deal on the Mediterranean, obviously. They had great boats. But they won all the fights because they had invented something that has been lost to time.
Oh, really?
The actual
laser.
Like a napalm fire nozzle. They would spray the other boats. It would burn the top of the water with fire.
Oh, all right.
And so he said it was kind of like napalm. They don't know what it was made out of. They assume it was either like petroleum, petroleum product, because there's a lot of petroleum.
Oh, yeah.
Or,
up out of the ground.
Pitch, like pine pitch. And well, that seems more labor intensive.
Right.
But okay.
They also had a lot of pine forests.
They did have a lot of pine forests. So, but then he went through sort of the Crusades. It was great. Wow. It was a great episode.
In just an hour, you covered 5,000 years of history.
Yes. And with some great, and some good dirt.
Ooh, a good primer.
Right. Some lady wanted to remain the regent of where she ruled. And so she cut off the noses of her sons, because if they weren't perfect, like Jesus was perfect, they couldn't be emperors. And so then she sent him to some monastery. She's like, they'll be fine.
Right, right. And then it was a monastery called Spite Your Own Face.
Well, it was fascinating. And the fall of it, the First Crusade, was they, you know, because it was because Islam came in through a side door after this was after Christianity had taken over.
Right, right. Islam was 900.
And then ran down the route, the top of Africa. And as soon as they lost Egypt, he says they were kind of doomed because that was the breadbasket.
Oh, I see.
And so they didn't have grain.
Right.
And then they took over Syria, which also had a lot of crops.
Right.
And
the other breadbasket.
And so the First Crusade, they took it all back.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't really, it never really regained the power that it had.
Right, right. So, I mean, right. At that point, Rome was in the Rome in Italy was now the center of the of Christianity. By the time Crusades. Mm-mm. Really?
No, that they it was still Byzantine.
Oh, really?
Empire.
It was still all right.
Might have been Justinian. I have it written.
Interesting.
Down.
All right.
And
see how much I know.
Well, and they let, and he said, you can rule. You know, he was having trouble with the Germans who had their own version of Jesus. Right. And the Pope was like taking more power. And the First Crusade was essentially the Byzantine Empire, the emperor saying, hey, we're going to need a bunch of Christian soldiers. And then the reward for that was to make those crusader states like Egypt. Right. And Libya and Syria and all that became run by, and then.
Right, right. I mean, that was the tradition. That was the Roman tradition for how they took over Western Europe.
Right, but they didn't have any of those diseases. So they kept dying when all their kids were 4 years old. And so they became weaker. And then the Second Crusade, they were like, let's do this again. And then it was not as successful. The Third Crusade, not as successful. I believe the Fourth Crusade just took over Constantinople. Oh. And they were like, well, we're done. We're just, why go all the way to Jerusalem to sack it when we could just take all the gold that's right here?
Right there.
Anyway. and then he talked about how the Turks took over and stuff. It was fascinating. I may listen to it again. We don't know.
I think you probably will.
It was great. Anyway, it was a great episode. I hope everyone loved it. And you know the rules out there, people. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?